This is the Web Strategies Podcast, a program dedicated to the technology and techniques of marketing your business on the internet. This program with program notes and links is found on our show website at www.webstrategiespodcast.com. And now, the host of the Web Strategies Podcast, internet marketing expert, Tom Anthony.
Web Strategies Podcast, it's a program dedicated to the technology and the techniques of marketing your business on the internet, which means it's not really about the technology, it's about your business. And in the studio with us today is Tom Walker, who's president of WebTex. And WebTex, of course, if you're a subscriber to our podcast, you probably already know that WebTex has been the sponsor of the show since show number one. So welcome, Tom, and thank you very much for the sponsorship.
Thanks for having me yet again.
So this week, in talking about what we're up to, we've got a big catalog project that we're working on. And I guess we probably shouldn't mention who the client is without asking their permission. But the whole idea of this on-demand catalog of marketing collaterals, I guess we should explain a little bit more about it. But it is a really cool project.
Yes, it is.
We are taking a database, and instead of displaying just a web page, we're making a display for the client that will allow a user, a consumer, or whoever to download a PDF document that's already laid out just like it was a company brochure, but it's editable.
Well, it's dynamically built. It's specifically built based on what the customer's demands are, which means that they can select from a variety of different products or different, in this case, it is products.
Yeah.
And then once they're done, it will dynamically build a PDF that will download to them. It's a personalized catalog specific to their needs.
I've never really heard of a application just exactly like this, because the other thing that it's married to is the ability to output this catalog in more than one format. It's not just a PDF, but you can make a PowerPoint slide ready to go. It's a graphic. But the graphic is something you would import into PowerPoint, and it would be look just like the rest of their corporate collaterals, which I've never heard of that before.
It's really unique. It comes to the whole new thing right now in the e-business and web world is custom user experience, or Q, which is starting to get a lot more attention. And what that means is being able to dynamically build a web page based on the user's desires or needs. Sometimes you're building that just based on their behavior. Sometimes you're building that based on specific input that they've given you. This has really taken the customer user experience to another level, which not only is the website kind of custom designed to your specific personality and needs, or needs in terms of products and services, but you're also now able to create custom outputs, like you're saying, whether it's a custom catalog in PDF, whether it's custom images that are pre-designed to go into a PowerPoint, whether it's in the next phase of this, I believe, is going to be custom animation, where you'll literally be able to build a custom animated project where you'll see a presentation specifically about the items you've asked for. And now once you start talking about this is pretty cutting edge stuff.
Yeah, actually, the client's really excited about it. And just to give a little bit more in the media side of it from your description, this little animation, it would include like the name of the company, the brand, or the logo coming up animated onto the screen. And that's, obviously custom work, but they'll be able to input just that one slide. And then maybe another slide of a product that kind of flies into view, or a bit about their processes, how they make their products.
Oh, and just to make sure that it's clear, these are not just building these animations that are logos flying in or images flying in, but we're actually talking about integration of 3D tours of processes and facilities based on the specific element. In other words, I want this specific product here. We'll be able to dynamically build a 3D tour of that particular product and how it's built and how it's designed, where in the facility it's designed. It's very cutting edge. I know the client's excited, but I think what people tend to forget sometimes is we get even more excited than the client, because what really excites us is, hey, this has never been done before. We think this would give us a competitive edge in our industry. Can you build it? And of course, our answer is always yes. And then we come back and regroup and go, okay, how in the hell are we going to build this?
And the way you're describing it, Tom, is giving the customer something that gives them some differential with their competitors, giving them the edge. And that is exciting. There's another client that WebTex works with that you're doing doing the same thing with, right?
In that particular case, you're talking about a business where it is a business of discriminators, and that's the way they came to us. There's a large company, a large client that we have. They're one of two major players in a particular field nationwide, and they all compete for the same business. It's different from a lot of what the rest of us deal with, and the fact that we're all looking for new business and we're all kind of competing, and there's business out there that nobody knows about, and let's try to find that business. But rarely do we compete for the same piece of business, and when we do, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. In this particular case, it is a large company, and they compete with another large company for the same piece of business every single day. There's 200 clients nationwide, and that's all they have. And their business becomes one of discriminators. What can we do to make ourselves a little bit different than our competitor? What tools or what product or what neat kind of commodity can we present to the customer that differentiates us and discriminates us from our competitor? In their case, that's what we do, is we sit there, we analyze their business, they analyze their business, we do it together. And for example, one of the things is environmental safety and health reporting. They both have to do it. They both have the same reporting requirements. Those reporting requirements may come from OSHA, occupational safety and health. It may come from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It may come from workers' comp. It may come from a variety of different places, but they all have the exact same requirements. So what do they do? Well, what we're doing with them is creating tools that makes that reporting process easier, more accurate, quicker, but it also tends to take work off of the client. In other words, instead of you having to process this paperwork, we're building automated systems that are going to process them for you. So while coming back to a previous conversation that we had several weeks ago, while there may not be a specific return on investment, or there may not be a specific value in terms of this is going to create X number of dollars in revenues for us, what it does is it's so unique and discriminating them and differentiates them from their competitors that it gives them a leg up, and they're continually building these tools. And as soon as we deliver one, we're looking for the next one, and that's really, really exciting.
It is, and it's fun. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and it's in our main segment today, is talking about integrating third-party software into someone's website. First, let's just take a moment's pause here to give you a word about the sponsor of this program, which is WebTex. We'll be right back. The Web Strategies Podcast is sponsored by WebTex, the consulting and e-business solutions firm. With a unique combination of strategic thinking, creativity, and technological expertise, WebTex designs and builds powerful and meaningful internet solutions. On the web at www.webtex.com. So, we've had a kind of an interesting experience in the last week or so with, let's just call them WTF Software, and I won't say who the client is. Let's just call them EFG.com.
We have had an interesting week with them, but it's not unusual, and it's something that everyone has to be prepared for when you begin to integrate third-party software into any web application. Today's web applications meet a variety of demands, whether it's simply creating an interface between you and the customer, but more often than not, you'll hear us talk about web enabling of legacy applications. And if your organization hasn't encountered a need to web enable a legacy application or web enable a particular database, whether it's your own or whether it's something that's provided to you from a vendor or a partner, it's going to happen. It's going to happen real soon. And there is so much more to creating a website or a web application when the integration of a third-party system that you don't control is involved. It's a whole new set of issues, a whole new set of problems, a whole new set of challenges, and a whole new set of headaches. It's required. It's necessary. It's not going away, but you need to be prepared. You need to know what questions to ask beforehand, and then you need to know how to deal with issues after that implementation.
What we're talking about is the process here to give you a little bit of an insight into the web development business, the inside part of our business. Let's just say that the website presents a catalog of sorts, and the pictures and the information about the products are held by this third-party vendor. And so the client comes back to us and says, the website's not working right because the product catalog isn't displaying all of the information. And we scrambled and really looked into it. Why don't you pick up the story?
I will continue the story, but I would like to say that this is typical of a lot of third-party integrations. But in this particular case, We had delivered this product with all the appropriate APIs connected to this back-end database system, were delivered, were quality assured, and was functioning properly. Over the course of the next several days, it seemed like every other day something wasn't working. And because we developed the web application, we were the web developers, we had kind of articulated the strategy and the e-business model, every time something went wrong, we would get the phone call. And the phone call wasn't, we seemed to have a problem with our third-party database integration. The call was, hey, the damn thing's broken again. And of course, in our business, and I think, not to put a plug in for WebText, but I think one of the reasons people like working with us is anytime, we're a business, and we're business first, developer second. And anytime somebody calls us and says, my business isn't functioning properly because of something you built or because of our web-based application, it is, you know, the red lights go off in our office. It is stand to, it is take action and find out what the problem is. That can be a positive and a negative, because in this particular case, first time the call came, we did just that. We jumped to, everybody got gathered around, we started testing the systems. And what we found was the third-party database wasn't feeding the proper data. And so we got on the phone with a third-party provider. We discussed it with them. They said, you're right, our hit, we'll fix it. And they did. 2 days later, a very similar call, different set of indicators, but again, system's not working properly, you guys need to fix it. Again, we spun up on the governor, started looking around, making phone calls. Again, it was this third-party system. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that happened 3 times in 1 week.
It did, and the second time was really interesting, and I think worth noting, and that is that, you know, we keep, or WebText keeps good documentation on all of the programming that we do. We keep the information in comments for the programmers buried in the code so that when someone else is working on it, they can go back in and know what each piece of code is supposed to do. And so we discovered that there was the name of a field incorrectly spelled in the previous version of the third-party software manufacturer's application. And we used it spelled incorrectly. And then the software people came in and changed it to the correct spelling of that word without telling anybody.
I think what was number three was we were submitting data to this third-party vendor, and then they were supposed to respond. Well, what we found was we were getting two different responses. One was this submission was completely appropriate. It was a success. Thank you for submitting the data, which, as it turns out, it wasn't a complete success. But the only thing we had to go on was that it was a positive feedback. And then the second set of errors was, or the second situation was, we were getting errors back, and we were like, okay, in order to adjust our code to meet the needs of this third-party software, we need to analyze these error codes that are coming back in order to be able to accommodate them. Well, we contacted the third-party vendor again and said, okay, we're getting these error codes back. Can you tell us what they mean? Can you send us a sheet of line items of what these error codes meant? And the response was, that's a great idea, and we're gonna start documenting those third-party codes and right now. But again, you know, the whole point, I don't want this to turn into a slam fest on third-party vendors, but this is a situation where if you're going to start developing these strategies, again, what I want to emphasize, the lesson learned here, this is not unique. I mean, this happens all the time. And the interesting thing to learn here is, when you're going to make a decision to go with a third-party vendor, there are a lot of questions and a lot of things, and we could talk for hours about what you need to ask before you do it, what you need to be aware of and mindful of while you're integrating that third-party vendor, and then the things you need to be prepared for afterwards, both as the developer, but just as important if you're the business owner or the client who's having the system built.
Well, my job is as the advocate of the client, and so I try to look at all of these installations from the client's eyes with maybe a little more background in technology than they have, so that I know which questions to ask perhaps a little bit better than they do. So I do it on their behalf. And in another case, we have a client, it's a heating and air conditioning company, and they wanted to literally kick butt on their competitors. So we're building them a site that has a built-in blog, and it also has access to the company's accounting software. It's secure. It's a third-party integration, meaning that it's kind of like a QuickBooks, but specific to the HVAC industry. So their customers will be able to go log into, quote-unquote, their account, see their payment history, and also schedule service, see when the next maintenance is scheduled. And that one in particular, the software company gives us an address, and we create a website that looks like it's the HVAC website. It's really the website that belongs to the vendor of that third-party software. That one's a little bit easier, but it still sometimes fails to meet expectations along the way.
And there's a particular example of, again, and something that we may talk about either today or in another broadcast, but that's a case where when that system goes down and that business owner goes to look at his website and, okay, the front end's up, now let's click on the accounting portion of this and it's down, who's going to get the phone call? And the phone call is ultimately going to go to the web developer, and then the web developer is going to have to make a determination. Is this a problem on our end? Is it a problem with the third-party software? Am I familiar enough with the third-party software to immediately identify what the problem is? Do I know the questions to ask? Do I turn this around and hand it back to the business owner and say, this is your problem? Or am I in a situation, in a contractual agreement with the business owner that I'm going to take care of it, and I now have the authority and latitude to deal with the third-party vendor? I say all that to make the point that hopefully you will begin to recognize that the difference between a simple standalone web app and or a web application or a website and any website that has a third-party integration suddenly becomes a much larger management responsibility.
Yeah, and I think it can become an unintended consequence of integrating third-party software into your website is that I think that it can serve as a frustration for both the web developer and for you and your business. By having it seem like everybody's pointing fingers the other way. Oh, no, I didn't do it. The third-party software did it. And the third-party software says, no, your web developer just does not know how to do a database.
But you make a good point, Tom, and that is, I think, you know, I'm not saying web developers don't make mistakes and that it's not sometimes the web developer's fault. It's oftentimes our fault. But I think what has to happen here is when you're going to integrate these third-party applications, what Tom just said is a great point, and that becomes one of you're always going to have finger pointing, and it's not necessarily saying it's inappropriate and that I'm pointing fingers over there because I'm not responsible, but maybe the web developer truly doesn't believe they're responsible, and the third party vendor, you know, we hear it all the time, well, 20 other people have integrated this just fine and now it's not working for you. It sounds to me like the web developer doesn't know what they're talking about. So I know we're talking about this a lot, but it is a big deal, and it is a major issue and a common issue, and now not to make your head explode, but we're talking about this in terms of a single third-party integration. We have applications where there are 2, 3, and 4 third-party applications, and then not only are we integrating 2, 3, and 4 third-party applications, but we hold the responsibility to make some of those third-party applications communicate with each other within our own environment. And so when something goes wrong then, and we get the call, and invariably we do get the call, now it becomes a major deal on our end and sometimes an all-day or a week-long event of figuring out where things went wrong, and the business owner really doesn't want to hear, well, we're looking at this API and we've got this API and we think it may be a problem over here, but we're looking at this. What the business owner wants is, you know, hey, WebTex, hey, Tom, hey, whatever, just fix it and get my business back online.
And I think that's a good description, because, you know, if you're the owner of a business, you don't really care how it works. It's like a light switch. You turn it on, it should work. And if the website's down, you go to the web people.
And then you hear this comment, which I like, and we've heard it so many times. I've paid a lot of money to blank, so I want it to work. And as you know, as I said earlier in the conversation, you know, we try and endeavor to, and I believe we do a good job of thinking like the business owner, and I understand exactly how he or she feels, but it can become very frustrating. And I think this is where, if there's a point to be made that I would like to see made, and that is you need to form a relationship with somebody who becomes your partner in this application, somebody that you turn to and say, I have a problem. I'm not saying it's your problem. I'm not saying it's a third-party vendor's problem. I'm turning to you as my technology partner and saying, Tom, Jim, Bill, WebTex, Matt, whomever it is, and say, I need you to look into this and fix it for me. And I think that becomes somewhat difficult to do for the business owners because they want the choke factor. It's not working and I need to choke somebody, and you're the one I wrote the check to, so you're the one I'm going to choke.
You know, here's another point, and I'll bring it up just to give our audience a little bit of an insight into how our business, whether it's WebTex or a similar company, operates. And that is, you know, there's a cost of us doing the troubleshooting for a website that we've built for a client. And if we're troubleshooting and it turns out to be the fault completely and clearly of the third-party software, then our customer says, well, thanks for finding it. But what happens to the human resources that were expended to find that problem? In our business, a lot of times it's eaten.
A lot of times it is, but the reality is it's a service, and most business owners, I would say the majority of the business owners, when they get that invoice for technical support, have absolutely no problem paying it for the very reason that we've identified. My business was down. I was able to make one phone call, and you fixed it. If it was a warranty item, I don't expect to get charged for it. If it was a third-party problem, I absolutely intend to pay you to fix that problem because you fixed it. I couldn't. I didn't have the resources to fix it. Where it becomes an issue, and this is why we bring it up, is if you make the business owner, or if we as the technologist make you as the business owner a little more familiar with the disparate systems that are coming together and the challenge that we face, and we make it an understanding of what is our relationship. Is our relationship to integrate these and to manage them for you and be your single phone call when things go wrong, with an understanding that you're going to pay for that service, then we've done a good job. We've set expectations right. You as a business owner get to make an appropriate decision. Yes, I want that single point. I know I'm going to pay for it, but it's lost opportunity cost every time these systems go down, and I can't afford that. Or are you saying, since you build it, I'm going to expect your system that you've built and every other third-party system that you have no control over to be built, and if it ever goes wrong, then you're going to fix it for me for free? Well, that's an inappropriate expectation. We need to do a better job on the technology side of making sure that you don't make that assumption, and then the business owners have to be more open to an understanding of the lost opportunity cost on our side as well.
You know, I want to open up that point a little bit, because it is really critical to a business owner that here's the wisdom, Tom. Thank you for bringing a business owner up to speed on how this business operates. Because let's face it, not every representative of any technology company knows that depth of field, of background, of why a business operates and how a business operates. So as a business owner, I think you need to hear what Tom Walker's saying. And if your representative from your developer doesn't come up with the right questions, ask them yourself, because they may not know. They may not be doing that intentionally, but they just may not know the best way for you to proceed. So I think it's the responsibility of the business owner to also ask questions along the way, so their expectations are stated, so that there's a possibility they can be met.
And this dovetails great into a previous conversation that we had in another podcast about having a team of people put together when you're building this kind of large-scale enterprise web application. People who understand the challenges of third-party, people who understand the need for ongoing technical support, people who understand that the web developer's role here may be to aggregate systems, many of those systems they don't own, and what questions do we ask? What happens if this system goes down? Understanding that the web provider doesn't own this system, but he's integrating these systems, and a good team here. This is why a technology person alone as a rep for a company is not always the right person to be there, because he may not understand the business challenges. He may not understand the magnitude of lost opportunity cost if these systems goes down, and the value to the business owner to pay whatever it takes to get it back up. The technology guy, you know, may not be the right guy, but he should certainly be a part of that team, because now this, you know, you see it all come together, because he's the guy that's going to know to ask the question of what happens when system B that you don't own goes down. How does that impact this global enterprise application? And you're right, Tom. I think at that point, everybody kind of works together to educate the team, not just the business owner, but the whole team on the impact, and then everybody's making good decisions.
Tom Walker is the president of WebTex, and WebTex is the sponsor of the Web Strategies Podcast. Tom, thank you again. It was a really interesting conversation, as it always is with you.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
After the main segment of each of the Web Strategies podcast programs, we always do what I call a Web Strategies Extra. First, I wanted to tell you how amazed I am at the amount of traffic we're getting to the Web Strategies podcast website, which is, I'm sorry to sound redundant here, webstrategiespodcast.com. I look on a program that's called Urchin, which tracks the amount of hits to a website and the amount of data transferred and referrals, like where each person that visited your website came from. I use that to analyze the Web Strategies podcast website so that I can manage to tell you how it's done. So if you look at a graph from 328 to today, it's almost a straight up arrow. It's about 100 people a day that come to the website. And if you just do the month of May, which is 17 days now, I've had 2,500 visitors, that's separate visitors, since the 1st of May. That's an average of 147 a day. So why am I telling you that? Am I bragging? No, I just wanted you to know that this kind of information is what you ought to have at your disposal so you know how your website's doing, where people are coming from. And in our case, if you click on a tab that says referrals, in Urchin anyway, it'll tell you where the traffic came from, whether it was a search term or a search engine. In our case, we're getting quite a bit of hits from Google, which is really good. And we're also getting a lot of hits from Stumbled Upon. So Stumbled Upon, I'm just really amazed. It's the second most clicked on first URL. In other words, people go to Stumbled Upon first and then they find our website. So pretty amazing stuff to me. And I'm very grateful for all the interest in the Web Strategies podcast. Last week, we were talking about tags and add-ons. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about tags today. I wanted to talk about the difference between a tag in the social networking sense of Facebook or Technorati and meta tags. And it's confusing because it's both so the name is close and it kind of is close in concept. It has to do with how your website is indexed, not only by the search engines like Google or Yahoo or Live, but by your colleagues on sites like Delicious. Now, in the Web Strategies Podcast blog, which is webstrategiespodcast.com, there's a tag cloud, and it shows it's on the right column of the page, at the bottom of the right column. And it shows by the size of the font, the number of times I use a particular tag to describe what's in a posting on the site, which would be the narrative describing the episode and the actual episode itself. Business Strategies is right up at the top of the list, and that's not an accident. The search engine, like Google, was looking at that particular page. They'd think that this page was about business strategies more than anything else. But the reason that that might rank higher than a page that you don't pay attention to is because all of those elements work together. The tag, the meta tag, title, keyword phrases. And if it seems on the surface to be a little confusing, don't worry, it is. But it's also not rocket science. Once you're exposed to a few fundamentals of how meta tags and search engines work, it's a lot easier for you to have a web strategy that will work in getting you ranked in the search engines. Thanks again for listening. And don't forget, if you go to iTunes and place a review of the Web Strategies podcast, really doesn't matter if it's good or bad. You can tell me I stink. It's just a show. But if you go to iTunes, you'll see a button that says review it. Just click on that button, and you have to have an iTunes account, but that's free. Log in, give us a review, and we'll rank higher in that internal iTunes search engine that is so secret you can't find out how that thing works. But I want your help. And we'll see you on the next one. Thanks for listening to the Web Strategies Podcast.
Thanks for downloading or subscribing and listening to this episode of the Web Strategies Podcast. Send show comments and questions to info@webstrategiespodcast.com. You can subscribe to the Web Strategies Podcast on iTunes or on our show website at www.webstrategiespodcast.com.
Because you know, when I do this, I'm going to edit it, so it's okay.
So they're really not going to know you're an idiot.
That's right. I make myself sound like I'm much smarter than I am.